morning, good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, August the 23rd, 2017, 12:12 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Scott Spears along with you on the Now program, and we are going to have a lot of fun today. Want to get a programming note in here before we talk about who we have on today. There's a WWGH radio special coming up this Friday. Dick Gregory remembered A Life That Broke All the Rules, produced and narrated by Adam Lepp. It's a collection of clips from interviews that I did with Dick Gregory over the last 3 years. As many of you know, legendary comedian Dick Gregory passed away late Saturday night at the age of 84. This will air this coming Friday, August the 25th, from 4:10 to 6 p.m., and there will be an encore presentation from 9:10 until 11 p.m. Friday night. Dick Gregory remembered A Life That Broke All the Rules right here on WWGH Radio. Sadly, over the weekend, we lost another legend, Jerry Lewis, one of the all-time greats in the world of comedy, from the MDA telethon to the Nutty Professor to Martin and Lewis. He was a mainstay in our lives for well over half a century. Passed away Sunday at the age of 91. Joining us to remember him is one of the most gracious ladies I've ever known. The last time I was with her, we were actually sitting in her living room on the Cape, and she is just as polite in person, I can report, as she is on the telephone. When I bring her on the program, it's like chatting with a family member, so it's always a pleasure, even in these sad times losing people, to welcome to these microphones the legendary, Emmy Award-winning, voice of Ursula in The Little Mermaid, and my pal, Pat Carroll. Pat, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Scott. How are you?
Doing well. I haven't had a chance to speak with you since May. How's the summer been?
Oh, the summer's been good. I don't do much in the summer at this age. I kind of try to stay cool, you know, and enjoy the beauty outside my windows. And I love to hear young people having a good time and active in all kinds of sports in the summer. The summer is so wonderful for youngsters because it gives them the freedom to be outdoors and to be active, and I think that's so good for kids. So good indeed.
Now, what were the summers like for a young Pat Carroll in Louisiana?
What was summer like? Oh, I was usually in camp. I adored camp. And I played the bugle. I was the camp bugler. I think my embouchure is all shot to hell now. But I tootled my bugle for the camp, both reveille and taps. And I loved doing it. Oh, didn't I feel important?
We're learning all kinds of things about you, Pat, as the years go on. I never
Isn't
knew you.
Isn't it wonderful? I've had such a wonderful life. I thank the dear Lord every day. It's been a wonderful life. And as we lose people like Jerry Lewis and all of our theatrical folks who have given us so much joy and pleasure over the years, I just say prayers for them because they deserve it. The contribution of Jerry Lewis, not only to our laughter, but to the coffers for good causes. The man raised so much money. Bless him. He didn't have to do that. That was not mandatory. He did it out of his own goodwill, and I think he is to be remembered well.
Absolutely. Pat, what was it about because a lot of people say in the days of Martin and Lewis, there was no comic team like that. Do you agree?
Say again, I didn't hear.
In the days of Martin and Lewis, a lot of people say there was no comic team like that. Do you agree with that?
No, absolutely. They were totally different. It was the old standard of the comic and the straight man. But Lewis, Dean Martin had his own personality, and he was an entity unto himself. He was not just a straight man. He was Dean Martin, and he had a personality for sure. But what a wonderful team they made, because they bounced good.
When you're working with somebody, what do you attribute good chemistry like that to? Does it just have to be there?
I think so, and I think it has to do with the old rules of etiquette. It's listening. And how many times today do we see young comedy teams and they don't listen to each other? And they miss so much. They miss so many opportunities for laughter because they really don't listen as human beings. You gotta listen in order to react, and comedy is mostly reacting.
That's absolutely true. Pat, what made Jerry Lewis on stage different? Nobody had what he had, that stretch voice that he would do, the pratfalls. What made him so attractive to audiences?
He was like a naughty little boy. And I think everybody, in one way or another, has had in their family that naughty little boy, full of mischief, full of beans, always into something, but so doggone cute that you don't stay angry with them. You can't, because they're too much fun. They have too much energy, and they have to use it. And I think Jerry Lewis always represented that. He represented high energy and a great sense of fun. He was a naughty little boy.
He always looked like he was having fun no matter what he was doing.
I think he was. I really think he was, because he knew that performing is based in energy, and energy can be of all kinds, and enjoyment is a lovely source of energy, and it displays itself, and he always looked like he was having fun, with or without his comedic partner, who was wonderful, and what a good bounce-off he was.
You know, Pat, you were around in Hollywood in the days of Martin and Lewis. What was that time like? It seems like such a special time.
Oh, golly, it's very difficult. I'm 90 now, and time has a funny way of escaping you, because I don't remember that as being any different than today, but of course it was. But I don't know. That's very strange. And the older I get, the more I appreciate the memories that I have and the time in which I lived.
Absolutely.
There are so many times people don't appreciate the time in which they have lived. And it's very special, not only because you're living in it, but because every speck of time for every human being is different, and yet it's an adventure lived.
It certainly is. Pat, I heard Jerry Lewis interviewed one time, and he said he never aged beyond the age of 10.
He probably was right. He was a naughty little boy.
Absolutely. Now, Pat, what age have you stayed on? You're chronologically 90. But how
I am 90, yes, and I'm very grateful to be there.
But how old do you feel? What age do you feel like?
I feel about 35, and that has to do with good health. I am very grateful for that gift. And I don't do anything to destroy it. And I'm very fortunate to be as get-up-and-go-ish as I am at the years of 90 having lived. I'm very grateful for that. And everybody who reaches these august years should be grateful. There's no reason we should live so long. But if we do, and we are still here, contribute. Give in. Do something for other people. Not just yourself. Live for other people. I am so thrilled to have grandchildren. I am so thrilled that my children are still with me. I've lost my son. May he rest in peace. But I have my two daughters, and aren't I lucky? And I have a granddaughter who is a corker. I mean, that kid just keeps me in touch with life. Isn't that wonderful?
Now, what kind of grandmother is Pat Carroll?
I think I'm kind of an old-fashioned one. I make sure I put dollar bills in envelopes and get them off. I try to keep in touch. to see what my grandchild is up to and be interested in what she's interested in, because that changes all the time at that age, which is the way it should be. Don't be stuck with things when you're 14 and 16 and 18. Let life be an adventure, a tap dance. Have fun with life. Live it happily and well. Wait a minute. Hang on just a second.
Again, we're chatting with legendary comedian Pat Carroll, remembering Jerry Lewis, who passed away.
Yeah, I'm back again. But you know what? I've got to go. I have an appointment with my lawyer.
Oh,
I'm going to sue you.
Oh, no. Pat.
You know that's not true.
I hope not. Pat, I tell you what. How are we going to remember Jerry Lewis? Really quick, how are we going to remember him?
We're going to remember Jerry Lewis because of the laughter he brought, and he brought laughter, and we're also going to remember how much money he raised in the name of charity for people who needed it. And I think besides the laughter he brought to us, we should nod our heads in recognition of the generosity of his spirit.
As always, Pat Carroll, dying gratitude. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. I talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Pat Carroll, one of a kind, to be sure. We're going to take a quick break. Come back with more right after this. Don't you dare go anywhere.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the voices that you want to hear. Marianne Michaels reading a poem by Nan Britton, the mother of the daughter of President Warren G. Harding.
And it's called Her Eyes by Nan Britton. Sometimes her eyes are blue as deep sea blue, and calm as water stilted at evenfall. I see not quite my child in these blue eyes, but him whose soul shines wondrously through her. Serene and unafraid he was, and knew how to dispel the fears in other hearts. Meeting an anxious gaze, all tranquility, these are her father's eyes. Sometimes her eyes are blue, the azure blue of an October sky on mountaintops. I do not see my child in these blue eyes. They are the eyes of him whose spirit glowed with happiness of soul alone, which lies far deeper than the depths of bluest eyes, whose smile a thing of joy it was to see. These eyes, this smile, are his. Sometimes her eyes are of a tired gray blue, filled with the sadness of an age-old world. And then again, my child's not in these eyes. These are the eyes of one whom grief assailed, whom disappointment crushed with its great weight. Around his head a halo memory casts, reflecting that refiner's fire which purged him clean and made him what he was. Sometimes, in child amaze and wonder blue, her baby eyes are lifted up to mine. These only are the eyes she brought with her, and so I fold her close within my arms and talk of dolls and stars and mother love. For well I know that pitifully soon she will be grown, and then her eyes will hold only the deeper lights his own eyes knew.
You ought to get a job reading books, Marianne. That was very good.
That's great.
Yeah. Thank you.
That is the introduction to the president's daughter.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, the voices you want to hear. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
And Scott Spears back with you here on this Wednesday, August the 23rd, 2017, 26 minutes past the hour. We thank Pat Carroll for coming on and discussing the life of Jerry Lewis. And again, we want to remind everybody there'll be a WWGH radio special coming up this Friday. Dick Gregory Remembered, A Life That Broke All the Rules, produced and narrated by Adam Lepp. This is a collection of clips and interviews that I did with Dick Gregory over the last 3 years. He was amazing, no question about it. It will air Friday, like I said, Friday, August 25th, 4:10 to 6 p.m. and 9:10 to 11 p.m. Now, the other day we were doing a tribute show to Mr. Gregory, and there was a clip of him on this program that we did not get to fully play because we ran out of time. But in remembrance of Dick Gregory, by goodness, we're going to play it right now. This is Dick Gregory on this program back in 2015. And away we go. Here we go. Hey, Scott Spears back with you on this Wednesday afternoon, and today we're joined by a gentleman who I have a whole lot of respect for. He was on this program last Tuesday talking about what's been going on in Ferguson, Missouri, and we got a whole lot of mail and calls on his appearance, and he's so kind to be back with us today. He's a legend. He's a just a generous guy to come back with us today. Mr. Dick Gregory. Dick, how are you?
God bless you, my brother. Peace and love to you and your audience, and just it's nice to be back.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Gregory, I have to start out by asking, the audio tape has been released now about what happened in Ferguson. There was a pause in the shooting. What's your read on that?
Well, you know, there's so much coming out of this here. You know, it's, and the people I'm talking to all over the world, they're asking me questions that I can't answer. First, the body laid there for 4.5 hours. And the woman who took the pictures, then they gave them back to her. And then they showed the body laying there. The mother was there. They wouldn't let her see the body. That was before they covered it up. Now, as long as I've been out here watching stuff, I've never seen anything like this. Usually when you call in, a cop calls in and says a shooting, you know, they don't know if he's being held hostage or what, you know? And so every police car within a 25-mile radius show up. We didn't see no police cars that showed up. They said, well, first we were led to believe that he had stole some cigars, and that's what the confrontation was about. And then nobody said anything, and then the police chief released, I guess you saw the picture they released in the convenience store. And we looked at that, and as we're looking at it, he had on Nike's tennis, red and white, with socks on. When he's laying out there on the ground, he's got on flip-flops. So we were calling one another, the real researcher, and said, now how do he change clothes? And then we get a call, and the picture that was released had to be somebody real stupid because the date was June the 6th. And then you can see then, you know, why two different days. And then we hear that a report never went out to the police about the robbery. And when the police chief released those pictures, he said, armed robbery. Well, how you have armed robbery on a shoplifting? Then we found out there was no gun involved. And then about 4 days ago, the owner of the convenience store with his lawyer said that never happened. He was never in there. And so you listen at all of this craziness that's coming out. The one thing to me out of all of it, including the murder, the fact that he lays there for 4.5 hours. Then the cop disappears. Well, any time you're in a shootout with a cop, I'm not just talking about black and a white cop, any time you're killed, it's just custom law. You have to go take a drug test and an alcohol test. When you disappear for 3 days, you wonder, well, wait a minute, where did he go? What happened? And then you have people that just see the conflict in it, and they're saying, well, a black SUV picked him up with no writing on it. And now you got people out there don't know if this was a police car, if it was a county car. And then they say, well, who took him away? And so you got all of this coming out. And then I find out that the friend he was with, the FBI, you know, have him under witness protection. So what is this about? And so what I'm saying this to you, I was there. I watched the folks they call radical, 90% white, coming in from other countries, I mean other cities, and they wore bandanas around their face. And they were permitted to do that. Then you say you bring the National Guard out for 50 people? And so you say, well, wait a minute now. The police chief, the mayor, were getting death threats. People was calling their house and their family. Well, all you got to do is the FBI, since they're there, they need to go to the federal court and get a warrant where they can look and see where those calls was coming from. That's traceable. None of that seemed to have happened. And so all the confusion, and then you got people out there that's looking, that's asking all kind of things. You lay there for 4.5 hours, a black SUV come and pick you up. I've had people call me the day of the funeral and say the coffin's closed. You think that might be somebody else in there? You had all of that coming, and it's not the people's fault. You know, people had looked at these kind of things for years, and this one is so, I know, me looking at it is strange, and so that's, I don't know what to say, you know. And so I can understand what happened with the district attorney, because district attorneys, they got to go up for re-election every 4 years, and basically the counties they're in is predominantly white. And so they think twice before they prosecute a white cop for killing a black. That whole thing gonna have to be changed. And so I have no idea what's going on. I talked to a friend of mine, a top researcher in Britain last night for about 4 hours. He can't figure it out. So I don't know what to say.
Mr. Gregory, I have two questions for you here.
Yes.
And again, I thank you so much for giving me your time.
When, I can hear you as clear as I was.
Okay, here's the two questions. The first one is, when you called in last week, we got an awful lot of calls and letters that half of them supporting, half of them not supporting. And the ones who did not support basically said you were stating inaccurate facts and turning this into a race issue. What do you say to those people?
No, I can understand that. I'm the one that released the picture with Ron Brown with the bullet in the back of his head, okay? And because of what people felt, they had to accept it because the white folks that did the autopsies brought the picture to me, okay? I get a whole lot of information. I probably have one of the number one research teams in the world. And my integrity, I know when you go out, I say things my mother would call the police on me, you know. And so let me just say this to you. The team of six that went up to Bin Laden's room and shot him in the head, are you aware that all six of them are dead now?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Well, see, a whole lot of people know it, but I will say it. And all you got to do is put five died in a helicopter crash, and the sixth one, the one that went up and shot him in the head, he was killed on the rifle range with other Navy SEALs. And then all at once, the news come out that there's certain Congress people want to have an investigation, and all at once that was stopped. And so my whole thing is this. Truth don't have to be validated by ignorance. And I just told you all the confusing stuff. You know, the emotional bit, it's easy to blame race and what have you. But, you know, I got the autopsies on Malcolm X. You know, argued with the government, said, why y'all got the autopsy? That wasn't a federal crime. And so we end up getting the autopsies. And if you remember the scene with Malcolm, he was standing up on the stage, and somebody released a smoke bomb, and people panicked, and these guys with the guns shot up. And we get the autopsies, all the bullets in Malcolm is going down, which means they had blanks. And so I'm the one that talked about when the book come out, before the book come out, on can't think of the name of it now. I'll think about it in a minute. So that's what I'm saying. When you have, and I said to you before, you said to me, you know, all the confusion stuff that come out, and all anybody have to do is you know, it's out there. The whole piece where the owner of the convenience store with his lawyer, anybody can check that out, said he was never in there, okay? And I would never go with bad information unless I checked it out.
Mr. Gregory, you said something there, and I want to make sure I want to get an answer that if Malcolm X was shot with blanks, what killed him?
No. I'm saying they must have gave the guys blanks who were sitting on the floor.
Oh, okay.
When we get to the serious research, the bullets came from up. The CIA now have admitted that they rented the Ottoman Ballroom 2 weeks before Malcolm was killed. Okay?
Mm.
And then 20 years from now, 30 years from now, stuff will come out, and it's there. You know, we've been watching this, we've been looking at this thing for a long time. And one of the questions we asked on the King killing, you saw that famous picture when King's laying on the balcony and there's people on the balcony pointing.
Yeah.
You remember that picture?
I remember that. Why were they up here?
Not knowing that, we're not asking why were they pointing up. We asked why or they stand high, they know it wasn't going to be another shot. That's not normal. King is laying on the ground. There's nobody down there saying, are you all right or are you this, you know?
Well,
and so when you sit, you know.
Well, Mr. Gregory, it's fascinating, but I have to ask this question in regard to Ferguson in general. This past week, Al Jazeera has had you on. You have been in Time Magazine online. What about this has put, not that you've ever been away from the forefront, but this has really thrust you back into full-scale mode. What do you think it is about this particular case?
I think it's social radio, that the stuff comes out on that don't come out on the normal channels, and I have probably one of the biggest listening audience in the world, because you sit and you look and you say, wait a minute, see, I'm one of the few people that asked the question when the Africans was doing the pirating. Remember that? Snatching the ships?
Oh, yeah.
You familiar with that?
Yeah.
Okay. I asked, how do a country that don't have 5 rowboats attack the mightiest navies in the world? Huh? But what is that about? I mean, something is not right about that. And then so people start calling in, and they say, God, I never thought about that, huh? Then they make a movie out of it. A pirate? No. One of them was a million gallons of oil. Who are you going to sell it to? You know, is it bigger than what we're saying, or is it more people behind them what they tell me? I just look at it and ask questions, simple questions. Just like that.
Well, I tell you, Mr. Gregory, I think that's what it will always say about you. You asked the right questions. And again, I can't thank, I know you're very busy this past week. You've come on twice. When the things slow down, or maybe not, when I don't know if they'll ever slow down for you, I want you to come back again. You're always fascinating. One of my favorite guests, one of my favorite people. Thank you so much.
Well, you got a minute?
Oh, go right ahead. Go ahead.
The book I was thinking about was Roots, Alex Haley.
Yes.
Okay. I'm the one that broke that story that Alex Haley never wrote Roots, okay? And can you imagine what people would call in and say, well, here's a simple way to prove it, and I say this to you. That came out of a white author's book, one of the best books on Africa called The African, by Harry Colander, okay? And those of y'all that got your computers, punch it up now, Harry Colander, Tad, Alex, and publisher. The person that wrote all that, Alex, came out of Naval Intelligence. The person that wrote all that was Murray Fisher, the senior editor of Playboy magazine. Now, here's a simple thing you can do. two things. Millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of royalty came out of all that work, worldwide, the movie and all. Well, that's a simple question. When Alex died, how come they had to auction off his farm to pay his bills? One thing about an author, if you're a drug addict, if you're alcoholic, you're a gambler, I don't have to worry about my money because the royalties come in every 6 months. All I've got to do is go to federal court and attach those royalties. Now, finally, what I'm saying is this. In upstate New York, in a federal court, all you got to do is punch up upstate New York, the trial of Alex Haley and when Harry Colander. And the federal judge made them pay Harry Colander $650 million, $650,000, and a public apology that he stole all of that. And the judge said, as long as I've been doing this, I've never found in these type of cases where somebody didn't change a word. Well, that's if I happen to know that and put it out there, I don't care what people say. I'm not running up. And then after a while, people come to, oh, my God, I saw that. I had Don Imus. I asked a simple question. You got children, especially mothers. You got 40-some thousand young children, young people came over here from America. Mother would send a child to America knowing all of the coyotes, all the snakes, the hot weather. Mothers don't do that. Then I just ask the simple question. It's more to it than what they're telling us. That's all I'm saying. So I said something to him, and he said, God, you said that 10 years ago. I thought you was crazy. And so now he's found out I'm not crazy. I said, what gives you the power, the right to make me crazy? Then when you find out something, I'm not crazy. I could be crazy and still be truthful. And so this is all we're talking about. And when you go on shows like this here where you expose yourself to people that's not getting nothing but the line, the normal line, then you accept that. But I'm talking to the people out there who respect me, who know me, and know I wouldn't. I'm going to Trick Time magazine. What happens is a lot of the stuff they read, and they don't print it. And then when something happened, they still got it in the files and said, wow, you know, he said this at such a time. That's all.
Well, Mr. Gregory, it is my pleasure. Thank you so much, and I would love to have you back anytime
you
want to come back. Take care.
Peace and love. That's all you do is call my wife, and she'll get you.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Gregory. Stay well.
Bye-bye.
Dick Gregory, one of the all-time greats, sadly passed away on Saturday at the age of 84 from a UTI that eventually turned into an aneurysm. So it's sad, but there will be a special. Don't forget the special. WWGH radio special, Dick Gregory Remembered, A Life That Broke All the Rules, produced and narrated by Adam Lepp, a collection of clips and interviews that I conducted with Dick Gregory over the last 3 years. That'll be Friday, August the 25th, 4:10 to 6 p.m. and 9:10 until 11 p.m. So you won't want to miss that. And phone lines are open right now. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If you'd like to Ray Lewis or Dick Gregory, call in and share your thoughts. Or if there's anything going on in the world right now that you have interest in, let me know. 740-383-9944. I thought Charlie asked an interesting question on his show this morning in regard to what restaurants would we like to see come to Marion? Because for years, people always wanted a White Castle to come to Marion. Well, it did come, and it did go. We do have the truck. I think the White Castle truck still comes to Marion. But we had two Ponderosas at one point here in Marion, and both of those went out, and now we have another Ponderosa. So what would you like to see come to Marion? Maybe not even a restaurant. Maybe just a store. Is there anything on your mind that you would like to share? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Now, I had found this book. I believe it was given to me for Christmas last year, given to me for Christmas, and I found it yesterday. It's America's Forgotten History, and we do a lot of history on this station. It's very important to remember our past, and there are lots of interesting stories in this book, and I'm trying maybe to find one here that would be of interest to you out there. Let's see here. Let's see if we can find a really interesting story. There's a ton of them in here. I just don't want to get one that's going to be too long. Okay, here's one about Amelia Earhart. Amelia Earhart's always an interesting discussion. Let's see here. Amelia Earhart had been flying for 8 years in 1928 when she was asked to be the first woman to fly the Atlantic as a passenger. Though the flight put her in the headlines, it wasn't the kind of recognition she had in mind. She meant to make her mark, and no one went at it with more determination. While George Palmer Putnam, her agent, and later her husband, made sure, Earhart received the lion's share of attention in every competition she entered. She honed her skills and built endurance. By early 1932, at the age of 34, she was ready to take on the Atlantic. 5 years to the day after Charles Lindbergh's flight, she aimed her single-engine Lockheed Vega east out of Newfoundland, bound for Paris. The night was clear at first, but at 12,000 feet, the Vega's altimeter went out and lightning flared. Earhart coaxed the craft above the storm, only to be sent spinning toward the sea when its wings iced over. Riding the plane within sight of the white caps, she heard an ominous vibration behind her and looked back to see flames shooting from the plane's cracked manifold. 4 hours into the flight, she had to make a choice: reverse course and try to land with a heavy load of fuel, or press on. On she flew for another 11 hours until the Irish coast materialized through the mist. Rather than push her ailing aircraft farther, she touched down in a green pasture and stepped out. "I've come from America," she announced to the farmer who appeared in the field. "But who was with you?" he asked in amazement. "Who flew the plane?" That's interesting that not a lot of attention was given to people other than Amelia Earhart, and that they thought, well, a woman can't fly that plane, which I think was the point of that story. Oh, a woman couldn't do that. That just couldn't be done. Insane, isn't it? Now here, we're doing broadcasting, so let's do some broadcasting history here. The clanging of a handbell and the cry of "Oys, oys, oys, hear ye, hear ye, hear ye," were welcome sounds in many colonial towns signaling the arrival of the day's news. In an era when newspapers were rarities and few people owned clocks, citizens relied on the town crier to shout out both the latest news and the hour. Making the rounds by day and by night, the crier was entrusted with notices of town meetings, weddings, and auctions. He was the one who told of delays in the departures of sailing ships and gave descriptions of lost children. In Salem, Massachusetts, it was the crier who called residents to the execution of a witch, and in Boston, the crier spread the news of Paul Revere's ride. In Massachusetts, the law guaranteed criers a payment of 2 pence for each notice they aired. There, as elsewhere, the crier was a de facto town watchman who was also expected to slip in reminders of civic duties, keeping livestock fenced in, for example. As long as his bell kept ringing, people knew that all was well. If he sounded a wooden rattle, however, people heard it as an alarm, a signal they should rally to fight a fire, perhaps or protest an unpopular action by the crown. So think about it. It's kind of interesting that really our first broadcasters, even though they did not do it over the radio waves or the television waves, were the town criers in these cities. That's very interesting. Now here's one, Ben Franklin, who I don't think gets enough attention, so I'm always glad to read a good Ben Franklin story. To publish a good newspaper, wrote Benjamin Franklin, after buying the Pennsylvania Gazette in 1729, is not so easy an undertaking as many people imagine it to be. By then, a veteran of his brother's paper, the New England Courant, and active in Philadelphia as the busybody columnist of the American Weekly Mercury, Franklin was only 23 when he took over the Gazette and turned it into the most influential paper in the colonies. The self-educated Franklin was editor, printer, writer, and tireless innovator all in one, applying his genius to commerce, politics, and society with equal diligence and wit. For the amusement of his readers, he dreamed up a comic cast of correspondents with names like Anthony Afterwit and Alice Addertongue, and he startled his public with outrageous proposals, once suggesting that the colonies thank England for emptying its jails onto their shores by shipping a cargo of rattlesnakes home to the Mother Island. Franklin's view of freedom of the press was no less original. If all printers were determined not to print anything till they were sure it would not offend anybody, he wrote, there would be very little printed. Yet one of his greatest journalistic innovations appeared in the advertising section. Until his time, ads were little more than jumbles of run-on listings. Franklin separated the list into single entries set off with headlines and eye-catching product symbols. A pair of spectacles, for example, called attention to an optician's notice, and by 1750, classified ads filled 6 pages of his paper. Franklin's skill at capturing the public's attention with print ended up making him rich. At the age of 42, he was able to retire from the Gazette and turn his talents to science and politics. So how about that? Did you know that Ben Franklin started out as a newsman? Now, I like that quote. Now, remember this. Ben Franklin, if all printers were determined not to print anything till they were sure it would offend nobody, there would be very little printed. And, you know, I think that is one of the most interesting things, to be honest, because all these newsmen now and all these women in the news industry, they all want to be loved. And really, by definition, you're not loved, because journalism is not an exact science. You try to go with the best information you have, and sometimes you're not exactly right, but you try to get as close to the truth as you can. Now, one of the problems we've had in recent years is people on purpose don't tell the truth. Now, that's a whole different story. If you know what the truth is, or you have not tried to look for the truth, and you tell a lie, That's a different story. That would be, as our president says, fake news. But if you have checked all your facts, you've gotten the information, you tell people where you got it, even if it's an anonymous source, that kind of is what journalism is. The truth kind of leaks out. Very rarely does the truth just come out in front of you and, oh, there's the truth. Let's run with it. It comes out drip by drip by drip by drip, and eventually you get something that is the truth. But if you waited to print that until you were absolutely 100% sure it was true, you would never print anything. There would be a lot of blank pages on the internet and a lot of blank pages in the newspapers that are left, and radio stations wouldn't have much to talk about. This is the fear of the internet, because one of the things with the internet now is people post anything. Doesn't matter if it's true or not. And a lot of times people know it's not true. They slant it to suit their own purpose. And that has become a major problem. But anyway, telephone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a ring and we will put you up on the air. Certainly would love to talk with you about everything going on in the world. Remember the WWGH radio special, Dick Gregory Remembered, A Life That Broke All the Rules, produced and narrated by Adam Lepp, a collection of clips from interviews I did with Dick Gregory over the last 3 years. You got a little taste of that earlier on in this hour. It will be airing this Friday, August the 25th, from 4:10 to 6 p.m. and 9:10 till 11 p.m. Friday, August the 25th. Don't miss that for love or money. There was a lot of interviews with Dick Gregory over the last 3 years and 2 months. A lot of fun I had with him. And I keep saying, whether you loved him or hated him or disagreed with him or agreed with him, I don't know that that was really the point. He was just an entertaining guest. And if you chose not to believe what he said, don't believe it. And if you wanted to believe it, go ahead and believe it. But I think he tried to get as close to the truth as he could. And he passed away Saturday at the age of 84. And we thank Pat Carroll for coming on to share her memories of Jerry Lewis, another comic genius who left us over a weekend, kind of a sad weekend when you think about it, two comedic geniuses, Dick Gregory and Jerry Lewis, both gone in the same 2-day span. We're coming back with much more here on WWGH Radio. Don't you dare go anyway. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
You're listening to WWGH Radio, LP, Marion, Ohio. Anyway, I'm going to give it now.